Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good. How are you, Justin?
I'm doing okay. We have some updates. CrimeCon is happening. The one in Austin obviously is happening because it's Texas. And the dates on that are June 4th through 6th. And we're going to the UK also, right?
Yes. And that date was in June, but was now moved to September 25th and 26th. That's in London. And if you want to get a discount on your tickets, use our code, please, GenY21.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This is your last chance to save 65% on a full year of BODi. I'm Carl, co-founder of BODi. That's B-O-D-I. And I want to help you lean into your decision to start working out and eating better. Right now, if you sign up for a one-year subscription to BODi, I'll give you 65% off. Look, I know it's not easy to get fit and lose weight, especially if you're trying to figure it out by yourself. But we make it simple. Just follow a program for 20 to 30 minutes day by day and lose 5 to 10 pounds a month. We have over 120 programs that have been tested and proven to work, and almost 300,000 five-star reviews in the App Store to prove it. BODi also has complete eating plans and thousands of healthy, delicious recipes. So stop guessing and start seeing results with BODi. And let me give you 65% off right now so you save big on the app that CNN underscored named Best Fitness App. But the sale ends this week, so don't wait. Sign up for a year of BODi and save 65%. Just go to BODi.com. That's B-O-D-I with an I.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So tonight's case, Aaron, is a local case to us, Missouri case, and it takes place during the flood of 93. And I remember this flood very well. I was living close to the river, and this constant rains and the Muddy Mo, the Missouri River, flooded in multiple areas across the state. I remember Parkville being underwater. My favorite store, Red X, was underwater, and most of the parks and walkways along the river were completely submerged. It was a big deal. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight we're talking about the strange murder of a woman named Norma Helmig, and she lived in Jefferson City, Missouri. And this takes place July 29th, 1993.
Now, Dale, her son, was 37 years old. He was a house painter, and he did a lot of different painting jobs, really. His mother, Norma, was 55 years old at the time. She was actually in the middle of a divorce.
She also had another son named Richard. He was Dale's younger brother.
Norma and her sister Dorothy would often play bingo together. They just lived simple lives.
So you had mentioned that Norma and her husband were going through a divorce.
Yes. Her husband, Ted, he had moved to a small town. This was close to Spring Creek. And initially, Norma did not want to move there, but she gave in after about 3 months. She often drove 30 miles back to Jefferson City, where her sister Dorothy lived. That same year, her husband Ted changed his life insurance policy from Norma to the son's, but he left her life insurance policy as him, as the beneficiary. In 1993, Norma would end up filing a legal separation from Ted, and he would end up moving out and living in an apartment in Jefferson City. So, as I said, Aaron, in 1993, Missouri had a huge flood. This was unprecedented. Now, it's on July 28th of 1993 at around 7:15 a.m., a leaky propane tank that was floating down the river would end up hitting a bridge that Highway 54 crosses. And this is the highway that goes into Jeff City. So the authorities would end up closing this bridge at 8 a.m. and they just waited for this tank to drain of all its propane before they would go in and remove it, because it's kind of a, you know, explosive situation here. Norma's home is south of the river. So you have to cross this bridge to get from the city to her house. The night before, Dale had stayed the night with some friends in Holtz Summit, Missouri, which is north of the river. It was July 28th that Dale worked painting the Pizza Works. It's a little pizza shop in Holtz Summit. When he finished, he went to drive back across this bridge, but of course, it was closed. So he turned around and he ended up driving east to Herman, Missouri, where the next bridge had been closed. So this is how bad of a flood it was, and Dale's having to backtrack back and forth, and he ends up going back to Fulton, Missouri, where he decided to stay the night. He was able to buy some toiletries and other stuff from a local Walmart, and he rented a room at the Traveler Motel. And at 10:35 p.m., he ordered pizza to be delivered. He ate that pizza, he watched MASH, and according to him, he went to sleep. But on July 28th, Norma, his mother, she was going through her regular Wednesday routine. She played bingo at the American Legion Hall. That's in Jeff City.
And after that, she went to the Country Kitchen, which was across the highway, And there she ordered a Western omelet, milk, and coffee, which was her usual. And then around 12:30 in the morning on July 29th, she left the restaurant. That's the last time that Norma was seen. Although, sometime around 2:30 in the morning, a neighbor of hers saw headlights from her house shining in to his window.
Very early in the morning, it's not normal for somebody of her age to have a guest that late or somebody to leave her house that late. And that's why the neighbors noticed this. So July 29th at around 9:15 a.m., Dale says he wakes up, he gets ready for his day, he leaves the Traveler Motel, he stops and gets gas, he goes to the 54 Bridge, which is now open, so he's able to make his way across to Jefferson City. He ended up stopping at a Mexican restaurant. The restaurant didn't open until 11, but the owner of the restaurant knew Dale because they were friends, so he let him in. And that just goes to show that Dale has points of where he was, people that saw him there. And he met an acquaintance at the restaurant, and they ended up spending the night at another hotel in Eldon, Missouri. So what happened on July 30th?
Well, this acquaintance was, I think, more of a girlfriend. But either way, Dale had talked to Stacy and said, you should come out to my mother's house this weekend. Dale was planning to see his children. He hadn't seen them for a while, a matter of months. And his mother had planned a barbecue to celebrate the occasion. So it's around noon when they arrived at the house, but they couldn't find Norma, his mother. And so Dale's walking around the house and he notices that there are things that are amiss. The air conditioning's on, but his mother always turned it off if she left the house. And her cigarette case and lighter were in view in her bedroom, but those would have been with her if she had left. So these are what you call red flags. These don't make sense. And her bed was unmade. Clothes were just on the floor. And Dale knew his mother kept a very neat and tidy home.
Now, at this time, Stacy is telling him, you're overthinking these things. She's probably just taken off for the day. But Dale knows that's not the case. And I guess there was a big antique window fan on the back of the house. And that fan was gone. And there were scuff marks on the side of the house beneath it. He crawled in through the window where that fan was.
Dale continues outside because he's thinking maybe she's nearby, and he noticed that there were tire tracks on the grass, and they were pointed towards the Pointer Creek access area. It's a boat launch area near his mother's house. The neighbors, Velda and Gus Party, they were cousins of Norma. And they came over and were talking to Dale. But in an odd turn of events, Stacy pulled the door shut, the front door shut, as she left the home, and it locked everyone out.
Oh, wow. Things get a little bit more serious because his mother's sister, Dorothy, was supposed to go and play bingo with her. She hadn't shown up.
This was one of their favorite things to do, is play bingo together.
She didn't call and say, I'm sick. She didn't give any kind of excuse. She was just a no-show.
It's one of those things where family knows that something's not right.
Dale will end up calling the Osage County Sheriff to report his mother missing. Now, he said that she was most likely wearing a nightgown, and her purse and car keys were also missing.
And I think he was also nervous that if she was wearing her nightgown when she went missing, maybe someone took her.
The officers show up at the house on July 31st. They will end up finding small streaks of blood on her sheets and blankets. So they will take those to the lab. But this is 1993. These are small amounts of blood. They're not able to do any testing on them because they just didn't have the technology then. They found strands of hair in the sheets. They tried to compare them to Norma's hair or Dale's hair. At least color and initial observations, they didn't look like they matched. They checked Norma's car, and in the trunk, they found a clump of hair, and that was sent to the lab, and they were able to pretty much confirm that it was similar, at least, to Norma's hair. They found a rectangular patch of dead grass, and it was essentially the size of a concrete block. If somebody had left a block in the grass, it would have died, and then somebody moved this block, so they're assuming this block might have been used the night she went missing.
So they have some clues, but early on, in many of the cases we cover, we get a sense of what law enforcement is thinking. And it certainly seems like in this case, they focused on Dale immediately because one, he lived with his mother. And two, yeah, he seemed to have an alibi, but he could have made it up. So they seize Dale's guns. And I believe they're thinking, let's really focus on Dale because he was likely the last person who could have seen her.
Yeah, and especially after they end up finding Norma's body, and it's actually just a day later, August 1st, her body was found in the Osage River. It was about 18 miles from her home. She had been weighted down with that concrete block, probably the one from the side of the house. It was tied with a nylon rope to her torso. She was barefoot and wearing her nightgown. Now, the investigators are thinking Dale is the one that reported her missing. Dale's the one that lives with her, and Dale knew what she was wearing when she went missing. So they're definitely thinking Dale is their number one suspect.
There's a pathologist, Jay Dix, who performed an autopsy and could not find a cause of death for Norma, but he did estimate that she had been killed in the early morning hours of July 29th.
The sheriff's office is interviewing friends and family. Sheriff Carl Fowler told the family Norma had been found, and he noticed that Dale reacted with anger, but he noted that it wasn't grief. He wasn't sad. So he's taking notes on that.
And as we said, he was noticing that Dale had ideas. For instance, the nightgown. How did he know that? I might say he lived with her. That was his mother. And he probably looked around for things and noticed that the nightgown was missing and her bed was in disarray. So obviously she didn't get up and then make the bed, right? That would just be him using his logic. But the sheriff's office is looking at this and saying, wow, he sure does know a lot about what happened here with Norma.
They interview other family members, including her ex-husband, Ted. Ted says he was elsewhere the night of, staying at his apartment. And the police actually comment to Ted, you should probably be our number one suspect here, but we have somebody else.
Now, a very strange interview happened. We had talked about Stacy, who was Dale's girlfriend. And when she went in for questioning, she talked about the time when Dale and herself got to the home. And she said that Dale had made this statement, you know, somebody got crazy drunk and killed my mother. I think my dad has something to do with this. I think my dad did it. Now, Dale had also commented that whoever had taken his mother must have been strong because the heavy antique window fan, like you had mentioned, had been taken from the window and was missing. So as you can imagine, the investigators hear this and think, wonder what Dale had to do with this.
They're looking at the time frames. Now, Dale's saying that he tried to go home, but the bridge was closed when he got off work. And then he drove back to a hotel and ordered pizza at 10:30 p.m. Well, the investigators are looking at this, and the bridge was closed that day, but it had reopened at 8 p.m. that night. They're thinking, well, just because you drove there at 6 p.m. when you were off work and it was closed doesn't mean that you couldn't have gone back later. They're looking at the 10:30 time frame of the pizza delivery. He had about a half hour window of time that is not accounted for. They're thinking that he could have drove the hour back to his mom's house, killed her, even disposed of her body in the river, and returned back to Fulton. Then he reported her missing a day later, July 30th. So they have a time frame. They know that he could have gotten back there because the bridge had opened after 8 p.m.
They also found a man who had been staying at the same motel. He said, "I don't remember seeing that car when I left the motel at 5 in the morning."
You know, all I can say is if I'm getting up and going to work at 5 a.m., I don't think I'm noticing anything around me. But hey, it's just one more piece of the puzzle that the investigators are going with. And they're saying, well, this guy didn't see his car there, so maybe he wasn't there.
Maybe the guy didn't see it. Maybe he was looking around at other cars, or maybe he's just trying to be helpful. February 16th, 1994. This is about 6.5 months after Norma was murdered. Her purse was found in a farmer's field. This was on the north side of the Missouri River, which is about 1.5 miles downriver from that bridge, the Highway 54 bridge we talked about. And just as Dale was talking about, her missing car keys were found in the purse. So again, more evidence that Dale seemed to know a lot about what had happened here. He knew what was missing. So they figured he must have thrown that purse off the Highway 54 bridge as he was heading back to Fulton. And because the floodwaters were so high, they had covered that farmer's field. So it was on February 25th, 1994, when the Osage County Sheriff's Office arrested Dale and charged him with his mother's murder. He was allowed out on bond until his trial. But what usually happens, they couldn't hold the trial where they initially wanted to because, well, there's too much publicity. They moved the trial to Herman, Missouri. And on March 1st, 1996, Judge John Brackman recused himself from the case because he had talked about the case, saying the prosecution had no case. Which, I mean, I don't know what you think, Justin, but they're just holding people accountable. You know, the judge shouldn't have been basically, what is that, throwing shade on the prosecution, saying, yeah, good luck getting a conviction here.
And I guess that's just par for the course here. If you're in a position of power, like a judge, you got to show a level of professionalism and you got to show that you're unbiased. He recused himself like he should.
Judge Jack Edwards would handle the trial moving forward. This trial lasted about 5 days, and the prosecution was led by Osage County prosecuting attorney Robert Schollmeyer and Kenny Hulsoff, who many in Missouri might know because he ran for governor in 2008. And at the time, he was running for the Republican nomination for the 9th Congressional District seat. Now, they had a theory, Justin. What was their theory of what happened?
They weren't well off. Dale's painting for work and Norma's not working. You know, to say that they're on a fixed income wouldn't be a stretch. They had a $200 phone bill, which back in 1993, that's a lot of money. So they're thinking they got into an argument over this high phone bill, and Dale decided to murder his mother and then possibly steal some things from the house to either make it look like a break-in or to sell these things just to make more money. They would point at all of Dale's suspicious behavior during the investigation, how he told Stacy that somebody had gotten crazy drunk and murdered Norma, but that was before they had found her body. So this is kind of suspicious that he's already saying somebody's murdered her before her body's found. He also wasn't present when her house was searched. Other family members were there trying to help out. He was a no-show. He also knew what his mother was wearing and all the details of things that were missing. Police just assumed there's no way he could know all these things if he wasn't involved.
The prosecution also brought in a hydrologist named Jerome Westfall. Now, he was there to establish that the purse was found in this field. And for it to get there, well, he was going by the water currents, the flood, and he surmised that it had to have been thrown from the Highway 54 bridge, which is the bridge that Dale would have crossed. So they're thinking this all fits. Who had a problem with Norma? It was Dale because of this high phone bill. And then he was heading back to Fulton so he could be away from the crime scene and toss the purse off the bridge, probably thinking, well, it'll be lost forever. And maybe it was a robbery. Maybe that was the motive for the murder.
They brought the Osage County Sheriff, Carl Fowler, up to testify. He talked about how Dale and Norma had gotten into an altercation at a restaurant in Jeff City the week before her death. He said during the altercation, during this heated argument, Dale threw hot coffee on his mother. Now, you put a police officer on the stand and he explains how Dale, the son of this victim, threw hot coffee on his mother in front of all of these patrons at a restaurant. That's some pretty powerful testimony.
This prosecution brought in a witness that I think had an effect on the jury. This witness was Missouri State Highway Trooper Robert Westfall, and he had been present during Dale's interrogation. While they were speaking to Dale, Westfall held a Bible and talked about his own mother's death and how he still spoke to her, even though his mother wasn't actually dead. And he asked Dale, "What would you say to Norma if you could say something to her right now?" And he said, he testified, Dale sobbed, "I'm sorry, I'm just sorry." Hulsoff asked if Dale ever denied killing Norma at any time, and Westfall replied, "No, sir, he did not." It's pretty damning testimony.
Yeah, he's saying, "I'm sorry," which we could infer, "I'm sorry that I did that to you."
That's certainly the intention of the prosecution here.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So in their closing arguments, they're just hammering this home. They're saying one of the most unforgivable crimes that could be committed. Dale took the life of the very woman who brought life to him. They would go on to describe how Dale went about murdering his mother. And he took a pillow out. The prosecutor held up a pillow, put his hands down while he drove his points home. He says, "As a person is kneeling over another with a pillow pushed down on that person's face, I submit to you that is sufficient under the law for the element of deliberation, which equals first-degree murder, meaning it takes a while to suffocate somebody with a pillow over the face. So when we think of first degree murder, most of the time we think, was this planned? But in the state of Missouri, first degree only means, did you deliberate for more than a few moments? Then that means you plan to do it. Now, what did Dale's defense attorney do?
And this isn't the first time we've heard of this, but this defense attorney wasn't trying to challenge any of this. And let me give you an example. So you just described how the prosecution is saying Dale killed his mother with a pillow. Well, they don't really know that. And it's not even really something you can just come up with as a theory. The pathologist couldn't come up with cause of death, but they're painting this picture so that the jury is moved. They want the jury to say, how dare you do that to your own mother? I mean, that's a tactic, right? But it's up to the defense attorney to say, hey, there's no basis for this. You're just making this up. That should be challenged, but that wasn't challenged. And the defense attorney, Christopher Jordan, also didn't call any character witnesses to say, Norman Dale, they had a great relationship. And then I'd say one of the worst things he did was he didn't bring in anyone who could corroborate Dale's alibi. Remember, you can have an alibi, but if you don't have anyone backing you up, that's just your word. Or as they say in The Big Lebowski, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah.
So that's not going to help him.
Yeah. The prosecutor poked holes in his alibi. They were saying, well, technically you could have driven back in this time even before you got the pizza, or you had all night to do these things. No one saw your car in the morning. So how long did the jury deliberate for?
It was less than 5 hours. They found Dale guilty of first-degree murder. And on May 20th, 1996, Dale Helmick was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. After all, he did the unthinkable. He killed his own mother, according to the prosecution, and according to this jury.
You're looking at this and you're thinking, it was a little circumstantial, but he lived with her and he knew all these details. It's what the jury is presented with is what they have to consider. And all they had to consider was everything that made him look guilty. Now, there are some things that went horribly wrong during this trial that during appeals will come out. And honestly, Aaron, I mean, Dale, he maintained his innocence from the very first moment that he was accused. Don't they all maintain their innocence, right? They all say, I didn't do it.
Yes. And Dale went a little further with it. He was actually very, very angry.
Yeah. Which, you know what? I'd probably be angry too if somebody accused me of murdering somebody.
He did have the support of his brother Richard, though.
When the prosecution brought up his girlfriend's statement that he said, somebody got crazy drunk and killed my mother, that's all the context they gave us. That's all the context they gave the jury. But the entire statement that Stacy had given says, someone got crazy drunk and murdered my mother, and it was probably my father, Ted. You know, the second half of the sentence would have been nice to have heard during trial, but the defense didn't object, or the defense didn't cross-examine her statement and say, let's read the rest of that statement so the jury has a clearer picture of what Stacy was saying. Now, Dale knew that she was wearing a nightgown. The reason why, his Aunt Dorothy had gone through her closet, noticed the nightgown was missing. It was her only nightgown. They all knew that she wore it to bed. So Dale had this useful piece of information saying, she's missing. She's probably wearing this because my aunt and I have already looked through her clothing and we're going to surmise that she's wearing her nightgown, or you might find a nightgown somewhere. That's deductive reasoning.
And this is one of the things that people ask all the time. Should I be talking to the authorities and telling them what I know if they can just twist it and turn around and say, wow, you got a lot of these details right. Why?
And that's what sucks, Aaron, is
a loved one goes missing.
You know the last thing they were wearing. So you're like, hey, my kid's missing. He was wearing an Iron Man shirt and, you know, a Spider-Man backpack. Now, all of a sudden, the fact that you know what your son was wearing when he went missing, which you thought would be helpful information to track him down with, is now being used against you. It's a double-edged sword. They go into the testimony that Osage County Sheriff Carl Fowler had given about that altercation in the restaurant, you know, where Dale threw coffee on his mom because they were having a fight. That never happened. Dale never threw coffee on his mother in the middle of a restaurant. Somebody else did, though. Right, Aaron?
Yes, but that's the job of the defense attorney. And I don't know if this is because the defense attorney was just poor at his job or if he really wasn't watching for those little changes. You know, if the prosecution is rattling off details about things that were said by Dale to his girlfriend, but they neglect to say it was probably my father, that's kind of important. But if you're the defense and you're not thinking about that, if you're not listening for those changes, you're thinking, ah, that sounds all right. I'm going to look ahead and see what I'm going to come up with next to talk about.
You're giving them way too much credit and way too much of a pass, but yeah.
I'm giving you a possibility for why this was missed. I hate to go and say this defense attorney is horrible at their job. Maybe they had a bad day. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that maybe they had taken pills that morning and slept through the whole trial, but yeah.
It's reflected in how much the prosecution got away with, because as we're getting into now, the prosecution literally made things up and withheld information to get this conviction.
The person who threw coffee on Norma in this restaurant was Ted, her husband that she was separating with. Ted, who had changed the life insurance policies to the son's and left Norma's life insurance policy to go to him. Ted, who was ordered to pay Norma $733 a month in temporary support during their separation. And Norma would end up filing an order of protection against him because he was so threatening. Then she would end up filing a contempt of court motion claiming that Ted had violated the protection order. That's pretty damning, Aaron. And if I wanted to say who's a good suspect in this case, it's not Dale. It's not the guy who reported his mom missing and had a pretty solid alibi because the bridge was out and he stayed at a hotel. There's check-in times, there's pizza being delivered there. And just because some guy said he didn't see Dale's car in the morning doesn't mean it wasn't there.
Well, I can tell you how that conversation probably went, and I'm pretty sure about this. Hey, did you happen to see this particular car in the lot? No. Okay, thank you. But again, this is a prosecution that took advantage everywhere that they could.
Ted, during this separation, during this divorce, would claim that he and Norma were still in a relationship. And he would say that Norma was addicted to painkillers and mood-altering drugs. He said that she took so many drugs that she would have to hold on to the walls to get around because she couldn't stand up on her own. He would deny that there was any physical abuse happening, although we know that he threw hot coffee on her in a public restaurant, but you know, he can say whatever he wants. There were notes that Norma had, you know, like journal entries and notes that she'd made out that were found around the home talking about all of her difficulties with this relationship with Ted. She called him a habitual liar. They were all afraid of Ted. He was extremely aggressive, and even Dale knew right when he saw something was off at the house, Ted probably did this, but none of that gets brought into trial. None of that gets weighed out. And here we are. Dale's behind bars, sentenced for the rest of his life, and he's trying to appeal for his freedom.
So the question here is, did this sheriff, Sheriff Carl Fowler, who testified about this altercation between Dale and his mother, did he just get, you know, the details wrong in his head? Did he replace Ted with Dale? Was it a mistake? Or did he do it on purpose? Maybe?
Well, it would have only taken the defense to be paying attention, to be awake and say, hey, can you show us the police report from that altercation at the restaurant? And can you read us the name on that police report? Oh, that would be Ted, not Dale. That's all it would have taken. But the fact that they got away with it and the fact that this officer didn't come back and try to correct it, I got to go with this was malicious intent. This was lying because he didn't say, oh, by the way, I got that wrong. I need to redo my statement.
So let's quickly go over this, Justin. They heavily insinuated that Norma was killed with a pillow by her son because he was angry about this $200 phone bill and that he tied her up with this cinder block and then dumped her in the Osage River. He threw her purse off Highway 54 bridge on his way back to Fulton so he could have an alibi. I wasn't even at my mother's house. Of course, he knew what she would be wearing and what would be with her because he was involved. But that's not really a case. There's so much that's been omitted or changed to benefit the prosecution that this can't go forward, right?
You would think. I'm blown away by how this went so awry because all the things that were said in court could be easily disproven. Whenever it comes to somebody being murdered, we always say the husband did it. The husband that got a life insurance policy paid out after his wife's death.
So at some point here, Dale got married to a woman named Patty. And she had said that around the time of the trial, she had actually complained to the Missouri State Bar about Charles Jordan's conduct because she said, one time we had to get him out of the motel. He was just lost. It was like he was in a fog. So not only was he missing things at trial to object to, but she said you could tell by the way he was acting, the way he was behaving, that he just was kind of lost. And so that's not fair to Dale.
Everyone always appeals on inadequate defense. All of a sudden, my comment about him being on pills doesn't seem that far-fetched, but I think it's fairly obvious in this case that his defense wasn't adequate.
A few months after the trial, Kenny Hulsoff narrowly won the primary election and then went on to win the general election. So he served as a U.S. representative from Missouri. This means he's out.
He's no longer a prosecutor.
Yeah. But Dale begins filing appeals with the help of Charles Jordan. And Jordan focused on the idea of corpus delicti. So he's saying Norma could have fallen into the water accidentally. There's actually no proof that she was murdered.
And right there, Aaron, it angers me because they're going for a technicality here. They're saying, well, they didn't even prove that this was foul play because they'd never figured out the cause of death. She could have wandered to the river and just fallen in. And I get that. But as we've just laid out a little bit of the background here, we all know that that's probably not what happened.
It's frustrating because you have an attorney here who didn't do a very good job during the trial, and that's putting it lightly. And then you're still retaining that attorney going forward. It's said that he wasn't just representing Dale for this trial, but he was also representing Dale's father on another legal matter. So it's like he's the family attorney.
And that's not a conflict of interest at all, right?
Well, and it's really odd that Ted, who seems to be a better suspect here, I mean, he wasn't even investigated. All I can say is when you have law enforcement getting tunnel vision because they already have figured out what happened, then they exclude things that could potentially, or in our minds, probably change their minds. So anyway, Dale's filing these appeals, and in July of 1997, the Missouri Court of Appeals affirmed his conviction. And this is what they said. It would be unreasonable to say that she left her car at home, walked several miles to the river, carried or somehow obtained a concrete block, tied herself with a rope, attached this block, and then jumped into the river. That's pretty obvious right there.
So this appeal is going after she could have accidentally fallen in, but when you play that through, we're not going to even consider that. But the appeals are going to keep coming.
Dale took matters into his own hands is what happened. And while he was in prison, he was in the library and he started asking around, how do I get a good attorney to represent me? Several people recommended Sean O'Brien. Sean O'Brien was a public defender and he often represented people in capital cases for the Missouri Capital Punishment Resources Center and the Public Interest Litigation Clinic. So Richard, Dale's brother, contacted this attorney multiple times, but O'Brien kept saying, I'm too busy right now. But eventually, O'Brien agreed to represent Dale after he heard that Kenny Hulsoff was one of the prosecuting attorneys. The reason this is because there was another client that he had who had been put away, in his opinion, wrongfully by Kenny Hulsoff. So he thought, two birds, one stone. If I go after Kenny, I can get him on this case and that case.
This is mud in the eye of this prosecutor because his cases are weak and he sees it.
In 1998, Sean O'Brien filed a new appeal based on the poor performance of Dale's original attorney. And he said, this attorney, Jordan, gave ineffective assistance. And on April 12, 1999, the Gasconade County Judge Jack Edwards rejected that appeal. And in 2001, the Court of Appeals affirmed that decision. So it's not looking good, Justin. He's finally got an attorney who seems to understand what needs to be done. But it also seems like the courts have already taken a look at Dale and they're just not impressed. But what can make a difference here? I mean, we've seen in other cases, appeals are shot down over and over again. But then media attention.
Oh, yeah.
Something happens to get the people to notice what's going on. And then it's kind of difficult to just keep hitting the deny button.
Podcasts, TV shows, media attention in general is important because it raises awareness. You know, people sometimes ask, have you guys ever got somebody exonerated? And I say, well, no, but we sure have talked about their case and people hear about it. People know about it. More people write letters, more TV shows pick it up, and then maybe somebody gets wind of it.
Yeah, we can't discount that we've had an effect. We just don't know personally. But it's always worth the effort, I think, to expose these cases.
There was a TV show called Was Justice Denied? And it was on TNT. It's all about how Dale was found guilty and did a pretty good job pointing to Ted, the dad, is being involved. So it helped.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
So it's September 15th, 2005. The Illinois State University Innocence Project, got involved and created a documentary, A Matter of Innocence, the Dale Helmig story. Again, more media, more things to get the word out.
And a documentary is very effective because a lot of people just can't be bothered to read about a case. But if you sit them down and have them watch something, it can really strike an emotional chord. So in September of 2005, there's a 75-minute hearing. There will be testimony given. I think that's amazing. Two jurors testified during that hearing, and during deliberations, one juror was a holdout, wasn't sure about Dale's guilt. Another juror knocked on the door and asked for a map of the area. Now, the map was not entered into evidence, so it shouldn't have been used during deliberations. The holdout juror ended up voting to convict, and one of the jurors said, more than likely, the map had a role in changing her vote. That sounds pretty bad. But this is what happens when the rules aren't followed. But luckily, someone is there to help, who can see right past all of this garbage. September 26, 2005, U.S. magistrate overturned Dale's murder conviction. This magistrate rejected all the claims except the one about the map. The judge pointed out that the state had brought a circumstantial case against Dale, and when the evidence presented at trial didn't convince one juror of guilt, that juror's vote changed after viewing a map. So this is what they needed. They needed someone to put these pieces together and say, you can't do this.
This one holdout juror could have caused a mistrial because they were going with not guilty. And then, oh, well, we're going to give you some more evidence that the defense can't object to, even though they probably wouldn't have anyways. But you might think, well, what's the harm of a map? Well, it was the difference between an innocent man going to prison for life or not.
Yeah, and I don't even think you have to explain it more than that. Now, of course, the Helmick family is excited by this news, and Richard said, this is the best news we've had in 13 years. Now, the state wasn't going to give up this fight, though, and the Osage County prosecutor, she said, we'll just put Dale on trial again. Everything starts to tilt in his favor because that judge ordered Dale to be released from prison, the one that was at his hearing. But the state fights this and appeals it to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. And so he is kept in prison. But we can already see where he's getting a court on his side, which is more than he ever had before.
But regardless of the courts giving him a win here and there, it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, which declined to hear his appeal. So this kind of puts him back at square one.
But again, we said the press, the media can be incredibly helpful. And it was in 2008 when the Associated Press revealed an investigation that found multiple cases where Kenny Hulsoff was accused of prosecutorial misconduct. They had about five of those cases listed. They mainly centered around Hulsoff withholding exculpatory evidence. What is exculpatory evidence for anyone who might not know?
It's anything that's in the favor of the accused. And this prosecutor is shuffling that into some files and acting like it doesn't exist. And when discovery motions are filed for it, it's not handed over for the defense to use during trial.
It was in 2009 when one of Hulsoff's cases really got turned around and the convicted was declared innocent of a 1992 murder for which he was convicted. So one of those five, I mean, that's just 1 year from when that Associated Press investigation was released. Now, May 30th, 2009, America's Most Wanted aired an episode that spent some time talking about the investigation and trial about Norma's murder. And they used the court transcripts and they recreated aspects of the trial. The producer, Dave Bolton, said, any objective person looking at the case and looking at the facts and looking into this criminal trial would say he did not get a fair trial, meaning Dale, and he deserves another shot at justice.
America's Most Wanted isn't about exonerating people. It's about getting the bad guy. So that's a very special episode.
Well, not only that, but it was the kind of show that when you watched it, it felt like the true pursuit of justice. And so it probably carried a lot of weight for anyone watching it.
So they're still appealing. they're asking for the DNA and hair to be tested, the samples that were found in Norma's bedroom. They're also going back at ineffective counsel. They're saying his defense attorney was prosecuted for stealing drugs from a university hospital. He had pleaded guilty to charges of receiving stolen medicine. This guy was probably on drugs during this case, during this trial. So we have a pattern of behavior. Please accept our motion that he had ineffective counsel.
This petition also goes on to say that Hulsoff and Schollmeyer withheld evidence, knowingly allowed a witness to lie. And we talked about this. Westfall testified that Dale never denied killing Norma. But in his written report of the interrogation, Westfall wrote that Dale had denied killing his mother. And what did you say earlier? Well, if they just asked him to check his notes, you said it would all be done with. Everyone would understand that what he had said was wrong.
Stacy claims that he said somebody got crazy drunk and murdered my mom, and it was probably Ted, my dad. And that's the exculpatory evidence that would have helped Dale.
There's also some odd evidence that was discovered here. This appeal revisited Norma's purse. Remember, this was found near the Missouri River. Now, they had said Dale threw the purse into the river on the night of her murder. The motion that was filed reads, recent evidence establishes that checks found in her purse dated July 28, 1993, had already cleared the bank and were mailed back to her address in August of 1993, meaning they could not have been thrown in the river on the day of the crime, as the prosecution alleged or argued.
Whoops. I mean, this is just simple stuff to look into. And this guy's been behind bars for a decade now.
June 29, 2009, the Missouri Supreme Court rejected that petition, but they didn't just reject it. They told O'Brien, file the writ of habeas corpus in DeKalb County, because that's where Dale was incarcerated at the time. And they also said, file the DNA testing request in Gasconade County, where Dale was originally convicted. I find this really, really exciting because the court is saying no, but here's what you should do. And I just think that's incredible. It's like they're allowing their hearts in. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, they pretty much told him how to penetrate the bureaucracy. So I'm glad they helped him out.
For anyone who has lost faith in the system, here's one little pin light of hope. So it's April 4th, 2010, when the Osage County Sheriff, Carl Fowler, he testified about the investigation. When he testified, he correctly stated that Ted was the one who was present and threw the hot coffee on Norma. So this is contradicting his testimony from Dale's trial. So of course, naturally, he's asked, what's going on here? Your testimony is different now. And he said, I don't recall that testimony. I don't dispute the transcript. In other words, I must have said it differently, but I don't remember saying it differently.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to get charged with perjury, but whatever.
Exactly. Now, Fowler also testified about serving Ted with a protective order on April 17th of that year. He acknowledged that Norma had complained to him multiple times about how Ted was violating that order, but he didn't document her complaints, which I find disgusting because you have someone saying, my husband is violating this protection order, and this officer is essentially just ignoring her. He went on to say, she also asked me about obtaining a permit so she could have a handgun for protection. Now, remember, this is all in relation to her talking about Ted, her ex-husband.
But then you're going to tell me that this officer got Ted and Dale confused when he's put on the stand to be questioned by the prosecutor about this specific incident at a restaurant? Come on.
I really can't see this as incompetence. July 2010, there are hearings held in DeKalb County about this habeas corpus petition. And O'Brien is really hitting home the point that there was way more evidence pointing to Ted Helmig as the likely perpetrator than there was pointing at Dale. So again, it's not just our client had nothing to do with this, but The authorities had a great suspect they could have interrogated. July 7, 2010, in a videotape deposition, Trooper Westfall recanted his trial testimony from 1996. He agreed that Dale did deny killing his mother when he was questioned. Now, he didn't say why he lied about this. He did say it caused him considerable consternation over the last several years. And he also testified that Jordan, Charles Jordan, the defense attorney, appeared glassy-eyed and fidgety and seemed unpredictable.
I'm glad that they're coming around, but wow, law enforcement officers who were on the stand giving testimony during that first trial that was outright lies or completely unsubstantiated. And that's why this man was found guilty.
That's a long time to go without coming clean. And, you know, if these people had been involved in a crime, you know, a crime of murder, say, coming clean 14 years later, that's not good. That makes you culpable, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And they just get to change their testimony 14 years later and all is okay. It's disappointing. So look, it comes down to there is really no evidence. There are no witnesses to this crime. And one more thing came out, which I found interesting, because during the trial, they tried to say that Dale wasn't at the house when it was being searched, probably because he was nervous about what they might find. But it turns out that he was advised not to be there. It was Osage County Chief Deputy Paul Backus. I told him, you know, just stay away because I don't think it's a good idea to bring your kids down there. You can think you're doing all the right things. You can think I'm being helpful, but it's all perception.
So they'll end up winning these appeals, right, Aaron?
This does end up in a successful appeal of sorts, because with all of this mounting evidence, all of these witnesses, well, it ended up on November 3rd, 2010, that a DeKalb County judge, Warren McElwain, found that Dale was factually innocent of the crime and that his trial was tainted by error of a constitutional magnitude.
Wow.
I love that line, constitutional magnitude. He wrote in his 115-page opinion that Dale was the victim of a fundamental miscarriage of justice and even pointed out Ted was a much better suspect. There's a moment where Sean O'Brien went with Richard Helmig, Dale's brother, to the courthouse to pick up a copy of the judge's order. And they wept. Because of this order, Dale needed to be released or put on trial again within 180 days. That means that Dale was going to be coming out of prison. Well, Kenny Hulsoff, he was in private practice at the time, and he released a statement. And in that statement, he said, "A prosecutor's job is never easy. A strong circumstantial case was built from the investigative evidence provided at the time by the Osage County Sheriff's Office. Robert Schollmeyer and I did our best, ethically and within the spirit of the law, to ensure a fair and reasonable verdict was reached based on the evidence at hand. The jury had a difficult decision to consider and unanimously agreed to a guilty verdict. Then the case was reviewed in multiple courtrooms throughout the state of Missouri. The Missouri Court of Appeals affirmed the case on appeal. The United States District Court for the Eastern District of Missouri ordered a new trial. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed the district court's decision granting relief, and the case was briefly in the Missouri Supreme Court. It is my hope that the authorities will consider all their options before making a decision whether or not to appeal or retry this case following this most recent judicial review." Justin, unpacking that, what the hell are they talking about? I mean, doesn't it sound like he's saying he didn't do anything wrong?
Yeah. Well, essentially, he's saying, I got a conviction fair and square, and it even went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they reaffirmed what I proved. So I didn't do anything wrong. But when the fraudster is the one that's in power, all those fraudulent documents aren't so fraudulent anymore because he's legitimizing his own wrongdoing.
I'll tell you what, this is a reminder at this point in the case that those who make errors or deliberately foul a case up in their favor, they will double down and triple down on that. Yeah, the Missouri Attorney General in 2010 announced that he would be appealing the decision by Judge McElwain. And on November 10th, the judge deferred the decision on whether Dale would be released to the Court of Appeals. So late that year in 2010, Dale walked out of the DeKalb County Courthouse. He was free on bond, pending the state's appeal. His bond was set at $50,000, which he had to pay 10% of, or $5,000. And he told the press, "It's a little overwhelming. It feels great. I always knew I'd walk out a free man." So his family had shown up, like his brother Richard, and they were going to take him to Rocky Mount, Missouri. And Dale was going to see his kids. He hadn't seen them in a long, long time. And he, of course, was thanking everyone for all that they did for him, because, you know, he said he knew he would get out because he knew he wasn't involved in this case. He was just really grateful for all the work that had been done. And thank goodness he had Sean O'Brien, because that's what a competent attorney looks like.
He's struggled since his release. I mean, he's a former inmate. The psychological impact of that alone is hard to get over. The University of Missouri, Kansas City, or UMKC, where I actually went to college, they have a focus on law, and they took an interest in this case, and they took an interest in Dale, and they've held a fundraiser for him to help him with his struggles. Everyone's coming together to try to get Dale to succeed, but the state is considering going after him again and retrying him. He's free, but there's this looming doom that this could all go awry again for him. But the Missouri Court of Appeals is saying, you need to retry him, or you need to drop all the charges against him. You need to make a decision now. And that's June 28th, 2011.
It's in the prosecutor's hands. What are they going to do? Are they going to go after Dale again, or will they just drop the charges? And on August 13th, 2011, Osage County Prosecutor Amy Grellner dropped the charges against Dale. And she said that she'd reviewed all the information available, including the case file, transcripts, witness interviews, and all other available evidence. And she also consulted with multiple entities and people, including the Osage County Sheriff, Missouri State Highway Patrol, et cetera, et cetera. And she decided to dismiss the case. And she said, the case remains open. Since it's a murder, there's no statute of limitations for the crime of murder. They might try someone in the future, but right now, they're dismissing this case. Dale's a free man.
You said that the case is still open, and we all know that Ted, Dale's father, probably should have been investigated for this, but he passed away March 24th, 2013. So, no justice there.
Dale got a couple of new attorneys because he was going to file a federal civil rights lawsuit against Osage County Sheriff Carl Fowler, former Deputy Paul Backus, and former Trooper Robert Westfall. Now, before I go on with that, I'll say, because of all the work Sean O'Brien did, he took a step back from his practice and focused on teaching. He just really needed to take time for himself. I think the case wore him out a bit. And so this lawsuit was filed, a federal civil rights lawsuit, and it alleged 7 violations: malicious prosecution, false arrest, willful withholding of exculpatory evidence, fraudulent investigatory techniques, and wrongful conviction. But a U.S. district judge rejected all 7 arguments and dismissed the case. And her reasoning was, she said, that the liability for making a false arrest cannot be based on the bare fact that the suspect is later proven innocent or the charges are dismissed. And that hurts, because I feel like there were lies, there were omissions during the trial so that the prosecution could win. And this judge is basically saying, just because you were declared innocent later doesn't mean that they didn't do their job right. It just feels like the system protecting itself.
You're absolutely right. It's on the face of it, I understand what she's saying, but it seems that she's compartmentalizing. Just because he was exonerated later, whatever, but he was convicted on bad evidence and a total miscarriage of justice. And she seems to just throw all that out or be completely oblivious of that.
I don't think that this case is unique in this regard, but This is just one more case that proves a prosecutor can take shortcuts, can manipulate statements, manipulate witnesses, basically do what they need to do to get the win. And they don't face any kind of repercussions for that. And meanwhile, you have someone whose life was essentially destroyed. They lost 15 years of their life with their kids, and they were blamed for killing their own mother. It's a horror story, but there's no real justice here. All we get is a little bit of hope, and we get a guy who can finally be free. But as we know, once you've been in the system, you're not truly free. This kind of thing can follow you for a long time, if not forever. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.